Line, bad pass, cross ice, turned it over. Islanders get Barzal alone behind the D. Shoots, he scores! Breakaway goal for Matt Barzal! Here they got it back in the Tampa end. Pulock straight on, shoots, he scores! Ryan pulls the trigger from center point, blasted by Vasilevsky, and it's 2-0 Islanders! To Cirelli, right corner. Worked it to Killorn, right half boys. Tampa skating 6-5. Into the slot, point the drive. Good save, Varlamov, rebound. Farley's got that 2 to deny Stamkos from below the left dot. 10 seconds to go. Hedman has it, right point in Islander ice. Left circle, Stamkos to drive, got the back glass. 3 seconds to go, the puck's out the center. The horn sounds, and the New York Islanders hang on.
TSN 1200.
All right, there you go. There's the game in a nutshell. 2-1 was the final. Islanders going to Tampa, beat the defending champions in Game 1. Tonight, it's Game 1 of the other semifinal of Montreal Canadiens. Venturing outside of Canada for the first time to play a game this season are in Vegas to meet the Golden Knights coming up at 9 o'clock. And without further ado, let's go to Vegas right now, where it is very early in the morning. And the man who will do the Montreal-Vegas Series 4 NBC and NBC Sports Network is Pierre McGuire, who joins us. As always, presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
Excellent, Jared. Good morning to you. Hello, Sean. Good
morning, Pierre.
And I know, Pierre, you probably haven't stepped outside yet, but what was the temperature like in Vegas yesterday?
Well, when I got off the plane, it was about 110 degrees Fahrenheit.
Nice.
Hockey
we're
weather.
Not allowed out. I just to be totally clear here, we're not allowed out of our room.
Oh,
totally
dear.
Serious. We're in full quarantine because of the Canadian government. If we want to go and cover the series in Canada. So the teams are in lockdown. The people covering the series are in lockdown, and it's pretty serious. So that's how we're playing it. So I took a picture from my window. I'm on the 29th floor of the hotel we're in, and I took a picture to my family of all the people at the pool. <It's pretty
funny>. You're living from afar. Now, you've done a ton of games in Vegas over the years, and you've said, despite the very high temperatures, especially this time of year, but always, that's a very good sheet of ice that they're able to provide there, correct?
Absolutely. The building is very cool in a good way, not a bad way. The dehumidification systems really work well there, even though there's not a lot of humidity. It's when the people come into the building that most of the humidity comes in. And so the ice is usually very, very good. And I've done the Stanley Cup final here against Washington. It was late into the month of June, and ice was not even a factor, not even an issue at all. So I don't think it'll be an issue, but I do know that it's going to be hotter here than normal at this time of the year.
Hey, even in the summer, Vegas, a big destination. As you look outside or when you arrive here, is it kind of business as usual as far as the city itself?
It is. I've been here probably 4 times in the last month and a bit. And every time I come back, it's busier and busier. And for instance, Sean, yesterday, checking in from my room, I arrived in Vegas at 10 o'clock in the morning. I got to the hotel by about 10:35. I had to wait at least an hour in line just to get to the reception desk for my room.
Wow.
And that's on a Sunday. That's on a Sunday morning.
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk more about this series with you in just a second. But let's reflect back upon yesterday's game one of Tampa versus the Islanders, and New York wins, as we heard in the highlight pack there, 2-1. What were your thoughts on the game as you watch it?
That the Islanders are full value, and what we talked about on Friday still stands. They're going to cause a big problem for Tampa Bay. And my big point on the whole series is, if the Islanders take two or more penalties, so by actually two is a Mendoza line. Take two or less is probably the best way to do it. If they take three or more, they're going to be in trouble. They took two yesterday, and one of them ended up costing them, and that's when he heard all that shenanigans, screaming and yelling about the end of the game for the Islanders, and that was great performances by Varlamov, excuse me. But I would say this, is that this is going to be a different kind of a battle for the Tampa Bay Lightning. This is not what they saw in the first round. It's definitely not where they saw in the second round against Carolina, because these guys push back. They're really tough. They're very physical. They know how to win. They got 4 center icemen that can win faceoffs. They won over 60% of the faceoffs yesterday. That's a huge thing playing against Tampa, huge, because of the way Tampa likes to play a puck possession game. So this is going to be a very difficult series for Tampa.
Would you agree, first series as well, that head-to-head they can actually match the goaltending, that Varlamov is back into the form we saw in the regular season before injury?
Very fair point, absolutely. I think that's a great way to look at it. And, you know, everybody's going to talk about the one goal by Pulock. That puck goes through Vasilevsky. But I can tell you, again, having done the first two series of the Islanders, I did their series against Pittsburgh, and I did their last series against Boston. So I've seen them 12 times live this postseason. And I would just tell you this. The thing about Ryan Pulock is when he shoots the puck, it's a lot like Vladdy Malahov. Remember how Vladdy Malahov could just absolutely wire pucks and would eat goalies up? Pulock's got the same kind of a shot. It's not just fast. It's heavy. And it goes through. It just spins its way right through. If you don't get square to it, it's going to spin its way right through you.
You mentioned that this will be a different series for Tampa, but they did meet the Islanders in the playoffs last year in the conference final and did beat them to get to the Stanley Cup final. The Islanders pretty much are the same team, are they not? Like, they should know what they're getting in terms of the game.
No, they're not. They're not because of Palmieri and Travis Ajak. They're a different team. Michael Dell Cole is not playing. So they're yes and no. Yes to they play the same style. No, they're not the same team. This is a team that's really got the dedicated checking on every line. This is a team where two players in particular, Pelech and Pulock, have completely taken their game up to another level, and where Scotty Mayfield's not even the same player as a year ago. So there's some internal development that's gone on with three of their six defensemen. And I haven't even talked about Dobson, who's a power play specialist who plays about 13 to 14 minutes a game. But you saw they backed him off at the tail end of the game, even though they had a 2-0 lead. And Andy Green's a swing man there. But the thing is that Palmieri's been amazingly effective for them all playoff long, and Zajac's been awesomely effective for them, especially in the checking role. And that's really helped J.G. Pajot, and he's become more of a factor because of it.
Are there a couple players on the Tampa Bay side as we enter now the first game of round three that you feel need to play a lot better or show up for the series?
Well, it's only one game, man. Yeah. It was a 2-1 game, so I'm not prepared to say that. But, you know, they're still going to need high-end offense. It's just going to have to come 5-on-5. I do think the Islanders are aware that if they play the physical game that they like to play and the checking game they like to play, if they don't play disciplined and smart and they take three or more penalties per game, they're not going to win the game. It's just the way it is. Yesterday, that Islander, the Tampa Bay power play was 50%. He hit 1-for-2. Can't do that. I mean, I'm just telling you, if they go three or more penalties per game, they're not going to win a game. So they're going to have to be disciplined. But 5-on-5, the star players for Tampa have to score harder goals. They can't score, you know, the power play is one thing. Not saying those aren't hard goals. It's one thing. But scoring 5-on-5 in the playoffs is a whole other thing. So they're going to have to get some gritty, grimy, greasy goals. And if they can, then they got a legitimate chance of swinging this series. If they can't, and they have to rely on their power play, that's going to change the whole dynamic for them.
Pierre, we always talk about the importance as the road team of the first 10 minutes of a game. Mm-hmm. Montreal is walking into something they haven't seen all year. A sold-out mm-hmm. building, a team they haven't faced at all this year. In what way, if any, is this 10 minutes that Montreal is facing tonight going to be different than what they've seen so far this season?
JR, I agree with you. Sean might not, because we talked about it on Friday, but I think this is a big deal. It's one thing to have been in the league for a long time as a player and say, yeah, I'm used to playing in front of big crowds. It's another thing in this, you know, final, and I don't know whether we call it the Western Final, Eastern Final. I have no idea what we call it. But let's call it the semifinal. It's one thing to get to the semifinal and have to deal with all this. And for the Canadiens, they've been playing in very docile environments throughout the entire season. And so they've got almost 60 games, more than 60 games of experience playing in docile environments. It's going to be a lot different. This is one of the most difficult buildings to weather the first 10 minutes in the entire league. And I can tell you again, from just having been quarantined in my room starting yesterday afternoon, well, midday, every television station in the city is pumping up the Vegas Golden Knights. It is a massive story here. You're going to have a huge throng of people around the building. You're going to have a throng of people inside the building, and it's going to be loud. It's going to be crazy. And if Carey Price doesn't stand on his head early, I think it's going to be a very difficult thing for them to figure out.
Tipping point for the Habs. They've got the top four with Petrie out, Kulik, all of a sudden to Gustafsson to Romanov. How much does that hurt the Habs going into game one?
Well, I'm not having Petrie hurts him a lot. He's got dislocated fingers, and that's a big problem, especially for an offensive type of player that really relies on his shot and his first pass coming out of his own zone. So I don't know how they're going to fix that. That's going to have to be something that's Dr. Mulder, who's an amazing doctor, is going to have to figure out for them. But to me, to see how that defense is built, one of the things we're going to show at one point during the game here, probably at the beginning of the game in our open, is the big defense for Montreal and how Edmondson and how Sherratt and how Weber are going to have to try to control the flow of the zone, their offensive zone. Talking about Vegas's offensive zone versus Montreal's defensive zone. If those three guys can't stabilize plays early on and stabilize the neutral zone, I think it becomes a very difficult game. Now, it doesn't mean one game, it's not the whole series, and they're on the road, but I think it becomes a difficult game one for Montreal to win.
Pete DeBoer, is Vegas going to try to play a matchup game, or are they going to be happy to just kind of roll the lines and roll the D as best they can?
I think they'll just roll the D. I don't think they'll worry about matchups up front. I think early on you're going to see, which is something that Pete usually does, is you see a lot of their fourth line, especially Will Carrier and Ryan Reeves. It's going to be interesting to see who he plays at center on that fourth line. They don't really number their lines. They just roll their lines. But that'll be interesting to watch. But I think you'll see a lot of them early to try to get physical with Montreal. I still think there's a belief that if they get physical with Montreal, especially some of the bigger guys who might not be as quick and they just break them down early, that could cause some problems for Montreal.
I haven't really seen it, but do you think they're going to go right after Suzuki, Kotkaniemi, and Caulfield? Because I think I'm not going to say easy, but I don't think they were really targeted by the Leafs or Winnipeg.
No, they were not targeted. Those were two very, very lacking in physicality series. I said it after the Toronto series. That was the least physical series in the first round of any series that was played. And I did 14 games and 14 nights, but I watched every series in the first round. And that was by far, not even close, the least physical series. I couldn't believe it. I think they will go right after that line in particular, and I think they'll try to take some of their skill away early.
All right, let's talk about a couple of the other issues which came up. This goes back to Friday, but we haven't talked to you since then. Tuukka Rask has announced that he's going to have to undergo surgery for a torn labrum, which will keep him out of action until Jan or Feb of next year. Mm-hmm. He's even at this point not 100% sure he's going to come back and play hockey, but also said if he plays, he's only playing for the Bruins. Do you think that's posturing, or do you think that's how he feels?
That's how he feels. He's a member at a golf course in Boston where he loves to play golf. He's really good friends with a lot of the people that are members there. He is a family guy. It's Tuukka Rask, a big-time family guy. His children are in schools there in Boston that he likes very much, and he likes living in the city. And if he were to go anywhere else, I would imagine he'd go back to Finland, but I think he really enjoys his time in Boston, and so I would imagine he wants to be a Bruin.
Strange dynamic, Pierre, that so much of the fan base and media hate him there, yet it's the only place that he wants to play.
He's an amazingly proud person, number one. Number two, this isn't justified. The guy was playing with a torn labrum. I knew he was hurt. I told you guys that he was hurt, and he was battling through it. This reminds me so much of what happened to Tyler Seguin last year from the bubble. I remember telling a media member from Dallas who called to interview me about Tyler Seguin. I said, careful what you write, because you could end up looking real bad here, because he's definitely hurt, and he's hurt badly, and he's going to need extensive surgery and rehab time when this is all said and done. And that's what happened. He basically didn't play this year. And so I did the same thing with Tuukka. The fans didn't understand. I think now that they understand how significantly injured he was and how he was playing through that, I think that they'll redo some of their opinion, but at least I hope they will.
But it's not even that, Pierre. I mean, it's not even the bubble last year. I mean, I'm just shocked that, again, this is years and years of a lot of people saying it's time to turn the page. It just seems very strange to me, he's one of the best goalies in the league, that there is such a strange dynamic in that market. Again, this guy's a star.
Yeah, I think 2013 loss in the Stanley Cup Final and 2019 loss in the Stanley Cup Final, just because how mean it really is, how mean social media is, that really created a groundswell against him, which is grossly unfair, really, really unfair. So, anyways, you know, he's a big boy. He deals with it fantastically well, and that's one of the reasons why he's such a good goalie. But to get back to JR's question, because it's an open-ended one in a good way, even though the Bruins may not have Tuukka back until January or February, Jeremy Swayman is really good. Now, a lot of people won't know him. He's out of the University of Maine. He's a kid from Alaska that went to the University of Maine. And he was the Hockey's Player of the Year a year ago. before the Bruins signed him. And one of the guys he had to beat out was Spencer Knight. And I'm just telling you, this guy's really good. He's not a little bit good. He's really good. I spent a lot of time with him this playoff season talking to him. And I can tell you, he's got the mental makeup and the physical makeup to be able to handle that position long term. He does. He really does. So it's going to be, again, for Donnie Sweeney, it's not that complicated a dance for him, I don't think, this summer.
Taylor Hall also spoke at Garbage Bag Day for the Bruins on Friday and said, I see a fit for myself going back to Boston. He said, I'm not necessarily looking to maximize my money, the money or the term. Do you think that if that's the case, that the Bruins would be more open to signing Hall as opposed to if they had to go out max dollars and max term?
He was very underwhelming the last five games of the series against the Islanders. He had an empty net goal in game one on a power play, believe it or not, and that was it. Very, very underwhelming. I think he got injured in the Scott Mayfield fight. If he didn't get injured, he definitely got nicked up. That was in game three. To say that, you know, the Bruins would be in a rush to sign him to a long-term deal, I think would probably be a stretch, but we'll see. We'll see how Donnie plays it. They don't have a lot internally that they could point to and say, okay, we got this guy to replace Hall, we got this guy to replace Craig Smith, we got this guy to replace Krejci. But I think if they were prioritizing, I think they'd probably look at Krejci first. They definitely need depth down the middle. That's one of the places where they really need to have some depth, and they just don't have a lot internally right now. They missed Donnie's first draft. Look at, they missed. They just missed. They missed on Kyle Connor. They took Zach Sinishin. They missed on Barzal. They took, you know, Jake Saboro. They missed on Shabbat. They took Jake DeBrus. So, I mean, they missed. They
not by much, though.
13, 14, and 15 in Donnie's first draft, and they basically missed, you know. So that's one of the things that's kind of set them back a little bit.
Do you also just kind of look at it, Pierre? I know you have to look at the entire roster, but a Coyle with Hall on the two spot ain't going to work, that it's pivotal. If you're going to bring Hall back for the way he plays, that Krejci's intelligence has to be part of that?
Well, that's why I say it. I think if you're prioritizing, you're going to take Krejci first. Charlie, I don't think Charlie at this point in his career can play as a two. I think he can play as a three. And I'll tell you one thing, in the deciding game, Charlie played as well as any Bruins center iceman. He really did. He had a very good game six. He had an outstanding game six. But all that being said, he can't. I don't see him being able to play as a two on a contending team.
All right, good stuff. On that note, we'll let you go. You got a long day ahead of you. 12 hours from now will be face-off time. Habs and at Knights. Look forward to it. You'll be there. Are you doing between the benches tonight?
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Good
Absolutely.
Stuff. Look forward to it. Enjoy the game. Look forward to chatting about it with you tomorrow morning. Thanks for the time.
I can't wait, Jared. Thanks a lot. Take care, Sean. Have a great day, everybody.
This is TSN 1200.
We are back, 8:43 here on this Monday morning. Hope you had a nice weekend. Glad you're with us. Euro 2020 kicked off Friday. Big win for Italy. We talked a lot in the second hour, about the Christian Eriksen incident from Saturday. Happy to hear that he is in stable condition in hospital. That is the good news, but boy, that was scary as that unfolded on Saturday for us here in North America, obviously on our television screens. But for the people in the stadium, both the fans and the players, that was incredible to watch.
Yeah.
And they did decide after UEFA did. They gave the option to the two teams, Denmark and Finland, do you want to finish the game? After they found out that he was stable and in hospital and looking like he would survive, do you want to finish the game now, coming up today, or do you want to come back and play the rest of the game tomorrow? And the players opted or said that they wanted to come back and play that day. Now, UEFA ultimately had the last decision and were criticized in a lot of quarters for deciding to come back and complete the game. Our question is this. Should Denmark's game have continued after Christian Eriksen collapsed? Simple yes or no, and we're sitting right now at two-thirds, one-third.
Mm-hmm.
Two-thirds of you say no, it should not have continued that day. It should have been postponed at least until the next day. And 33% of you, obviously the rest of you, would say yes. Keep the votes coming at tsn1200.ca.
Yeah, and Finn's kindest people on the planet, JR, no way you're looking at this competitively. They would have probably been sitting in their locker room and saying, hey, let's do it for the sport. But my, oh my, for a country that had never won a game at the Euro, or had they even qualified for a Euro in the past?
Finland has never played in a major tournament.
So to that, I mean, hey, advantage Finland coming into a second half of a game like that. And as I said, I think if they had a do-over from the Danish side and the people above and the Danish Soccer Federation would have said, hey, let's hop home here, let's reset, and let's redo the match the following day.
Yeah, Josh texts in, and I think this is a relatively good point because, again, the majority of people are saying it was not a good decision. But Josh says if Denmark would have won the game, everyone would have thought that was the greatest thing ever. You know,
yeah,
we've done it
point.
For our teammate, yeah. and so the narrative becomes completely different in that case.
No, so good, or so true, and we've seen tragedy. Now, in this case, the saving of him, and also JR, I just think back to like how incredible from Yuri Fischer to other players that have happened, and then you think, unfortunately, to Sergei Zoltok, who died in Belarus, and of course, a guy like Cherepanov, the young first-round pick of the New York Rangers at a rink where they didn't have it powered up. Like, to imagine, he lost his life because some clown... They didn't have all the measures set in place. They're trying to plug the darn thing in and died. I mean, just so fortunate now, not only in professional sports, lots of sports venues around here in Ottawa, I know, have at ballparks and other places now that have the defibrillator set up just to make sure that if tragedy happens, that you'll be able to save a life.
All right, England wins its first game yesterday, so they're off to a good start at Euro 2020. We've got three matches today, including one here on TSN 1200. We're doing the 9 o'clock game, so coming up in about 13 minutes from now, Scotland taking on the Czech Republic in their opening match. Comes up at 9 o'clock this morning. Later on today, Spain will take on Sweden. That also a very good game scheduled for today. A lot of people think that Spain, a little long in the tooth in terms of their dominance. Of course, they were the 10 years ago, they were the bell of the ball as far as world soccer went. They were the won the World Cup and the Euro. First team ever to do that in back-to-back competitions. They have now, they're not quite at that level, but we'll see what they're up to. Taking on the Swedes are always a tough out.
Yeah.
So that game is at 3 o'clock.
Well, and pretty special for the listeners. At 9:45, the three of us will come down and break down the first half.
Halftime report.
And I want to. I'm going to be breaking down. My specialty is set pieces.
Yes.
So I'll be in charge. You're in charge of lineup formation and tactically, and then Hammer.
Yes.
What are we doing? Hammer doing the goaltender analysis? Hey, what are we feeling
here? The analysis of the goalkeepers?
Yeah. Maybe with maybe the disposition of the managers.
That's
I always like that. Who's standing with his arms crossed on the sideline?
Who's hustling up and down the line, barking out instructions?
Who's in those very comfy-looking automobile seats that they all sit in?
And I don't like the shirt and tie for soccer coaches. I feel like you got to get out there. I think you should be in the full kit or at least a tracksuit. The guy from Croatia looked like he just returned from the bar yesterday, had the long white T-shirt on. And I don't want to say it's because of you and the media, but the Dutch coach just looks stubborn. And maybe because he has a large head, but he appears to be a very stubborn individual.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying that based on looking at him.
Yeah. Wooden shoes, wooden head, wooden listen.
Oh, yeah. But has he been criticized for that? And he was a great player, JR, back in his
day? Yes, Frank DeBoer. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Stubborn or just not very good at being
a manager.
Maybe both.
Yeah. Do you feel they're, like, now even more so in the tight Euro suits, I don't feel like you're able to really do your full thing on the sideline there. Like, those tight pants, first of all, they're usually running up your crotch and you're picking out your underwear. And then to try to really, you got to be a strong arm folder to be a good coach, do you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I think a lot of those suits, I don't even think you can fold your arms. Hey?
Well, if you do, it certainly shows off the Mark Bergevin, right? Shows off the guns
that's
if it's
true.
If he can stretch it there for you.
Yeah.
All right, we got a match coming up in about 11 minutes. So let's wrap up a couple of things. First of all, this is a big day in sports history because something happened today back in 1994 that sports fans remember.
Poirier's going to go ahead with quick hands. McTavis will have to nullify it. Here it is. The waiting is over. The New York Rangers are the Stanley Cup champions. And this one will last a lifetime. No more purses. This is unbelievable.
There you go. Sam Roslin with the call of the New York Rangers breaking the longest championship drought in NHL history, 54 years, from 1940 until 1994. On this day, this night, Craig McTavish wins the final draw and allows the Rangers to beat Vancouver 3-2 in Game 7. And I will always remember the guy in the stands holding up the sign that simply read, "Now I can die in peace."
Yeah, absolutely incredible knowing so many people on both sides, JR. And for George McPhee and Pat Quinn, Mike Penny, they talked about the bus ride in that day and just how incredible that series was. And for Vancouver Canucks fans and you being a following the Flames back in the day, you know, Vancouver was a bottom feeder for a long time. And this branded them with Trevor Lynn and Kirk McLean, Bure kind of the lineup. It was a great series and exciting for the New York Rangers. Now, from Neil Smith, who was the manager, they did everything possible. They bought and traded for every single Edmonton Oiler that was any good, including, I think, the final piece being Kevin Lowe. So it was huge for the National Hockey League. We lost to the Rangers that year in the playoffs after knocking out Pittsburgh and lost them in the second round. But big for the league. And then what do? They go in right into a lockout. But this I don't want to say put it on the map, but this was really a big deal that finally a major market, because this is when Chicago was stinky and Detroit was just starting to come back. So it was really big for the National Hockey League.
When you think about it, so that is the only, and the Rangers got back to the final and lost to LA in 2014, I believe it was, right? But so they've won that one championship. We're in now, you know, 81 years.
Yeah,
think
incredible.
About that.
Yeah.
And at 54 years, the longest streak now in NHL history now becomes the Toronto Maple Leafs, right? I was thinking about that because next year is the first year they could possibly win it. That will be 55 years.
Wow.
2022. So the Maple Leafs will hold a record if and when they ever win it.
Yeah.
Longest championship drought in NHL history.
Yeah,
way to go, Toronto.
Yeah,
nice job.
Well, I think a lot of people yesterday kind of on that bandwagon of talking about JR, the Leafs versus English soccer, right? 1966, last time they won, and the thinking they invented the sport and the arrogance that kind of goes with that. And I think for social media, a lot of play on the weekend as well, as Austin Matthews attended the UFC with Justin Bieber. Lots of people mad that he's living life, JR.
He should not be allowed to.
Nope.
Go
should
hang
be,
your head
should
in shame.
Be hiding home.
Back on the ice practicing now.
Well, you know, Mitz is there. Dad's doing workouts. They're probably skating. Willie is probably in Monaco on a beach somewhere, right?
Hey,
just
styling the hair.
Just a pair of shorts and sunglasses. Yeah. Just
or wearing
the
nice European suit.
Yeah, that's true.
At
that's
the bar.
True. Yeah.
Also on this day in 1998. The Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan won their sixth and final championship in 8 years by beating the Utah Jazz 87-86 in Game 6. And that would end up being Michael Jordan's final game in a Chicago Bulls uniform, as we saw play itself out a year ago at this time during the documentary The Last Dance.
Yeah, so incredible to watch that. And gosh, came over and would see him on a regular basis at the office in D.C. Funny, I never thought much about it as far as the stardom. You knew he was a star, JR, but it also felt very weird when he came back and played with the Wizards because, first of all, that should never have happened, but he just didn't look the part, right? He was an older man, and the flying in the air off of the slam dunk contest, Michael Jordan was long gone, and I guess it was almost a touch embarrassing when he came back.
And it was 10 years ago today, June the 14th, 2011, the Ottawa Senators introduced Paul McLean
as
their new head coach. And, of course, he would go on to lead the Sens. Well, seven-game series versus the Rangers 2012, they ended up losing. But then 2013 would be his shining moment behind the Sens bench in the first-round beating of Montreal. And the to and fro with Michelle Therrien at the time. That would be the high watermark of Paul McLean's time
with
the Sens.
And funny, JR just moved back to Ottawa, would listen to you guys all the time and think, God, I got to get a hold of Mr. JR and see if I can get on the radio. And I also remember from an Ottawa perspective, it was really exciting. And I hope lessons learned by Eugene Melnyk to Pierre Dorion. They hired the coach. They had just won the Calder Cup in the American League. They had three first-round picks. And at least early on from Bishop to tourists, to a lot of things they were doing, they were firing on all cylinders as a hockey operation, and then it went sideways. And I think right now, if I was to reset where they're at now, I'd say around 2013, where it was in a pretty good spot. And let's hope they learn from that and can navigate to a much better spot than the roller coaster that followed the next 6 years.
Happy birthday, by the way, to Ottawa Senator Parker Kelly, who turns 22 years old today. He may be a dark horse candidate to jump into the Sen sooner rather than later. I think the team is very high on him. Now, he came in, scored that one goal in his first game,
but he
is the type of player, that little buzzsaw that buzzes around on a fourth line and, you know, might chip in a little bit offensively, but just as an expert at getting under other players. We saw him play one game, and he was pissing guys off on the other team already.
Yeah.
So I think he's I don't necessarily saying it's going to be as soon as this year, but the way everybody talks, including Troy Mann, seems like they really think this guy's going to be a National Hockey League player.
Yeah, and I think in a perfect world, Jer, is he wing or center?
He's left wing.
Okay, so I would say that left wing, and then you find, and it's not going to be Tierney or White for this year, but I would think you'd like to find the same type of player to play between him and Austin Watson, right, where you create a bit of an energy line and a line that can get out and get after it and play a little bit. So I totally agree with you.
All right, good stuff. Happy birthday, by the way, if you are celebrating today on this June the 14th. And with that, we will put on a wrap on the show for now. Now, we're going to be back. We're going to take you to Euro 2020 coming up in about 3 minutes. Scotland, Czech Republic, that's our match of the day here on TSN 1200. We're going to come back and we'll fill in the halftime. Then we'll take you through. And then in the box, we'll immediately follow the conclusion of the game at around 10:50 or so this morning. Rest of the day, we'll spill out as it typically would in the box at 10:50 till 2, and then at 2 o'clock, the drive. All right, so we'll take a break. We'll talk to you at halftime. In the meantime, enjoy the game. Scotland, Czech Republic, Euro 2020 is next on TSN 1200.
Time has expired. There's the Hooter.
Let's go to eat a damn snack.
Pull up your pants, take off the bra, and be a man.
Did a horrible job.
I'd be up that guy's yin-yang so far with a firecracker, he wouldn't know what hit him.